Welcome to Biohackers Lab, a place where we talk to smart people who are figuring out how to improve health in interesting ways. Join us to discover how you can biohack your life, your body, starting today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Biohackers Lab. I'm your host, Gary Kerwin, and on today's show, I've got Jeffrey Wu. And Jeff is a co-founder and CEO of Nutrabox, which is a nootropic supplement and biohacking technology company based in the US. And this company has some big name investors behind it, which one particular person that maybe a lot of listeners from around the world will know will be Marissa Mayer, who's the CEO of Yahoo. So I just want to say thanks so much for coming onto the show today, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Gary.
Cool. So the reason I've got you on is because a previous guest on the show was Dr. Brianna Stubbs, and Brianna does work on your medical advisory panel, I believe, at Nutrabox.
Yeah. Yeah. She's actually moving out to San Francisco next week and working, we'll be joining forces and working together.
Oh, fantastic. She didn't drop that one. That's a big move for her from Oxford to the West Coast of the US.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, yeah, I want to get you on because you're a biohacker and you're a nootropics guy. So we've got so many cool things that I think we could get into today. But maybe if we could start with is how did Nutrabox actually begin? How did the whole concept behind the company start?
Yeah, back in 2014, if you look at the Google trends for nootropics and biohacking, that was really when those terms are lifting off. And at the time, I had sold my first company to a company called Groupon and was, at Groupon vesting out, some golden handcuff clauses, essentially stock packages that keep you around. But you quickly kind of know that, hey, a big company thing wasn't my cup of tea. So I was, as an engineer, I'm a computer scientist by training. I looked at solving the meta problem of making myself smarter while not necessarily knowing what to work on next. And that very much came to be a very deep and broad area of inquiry in itself. How does one become smarter, more productive? How do I enhance myself? So during that break period at Groupon, I was looking at, biohacking forums, starting to see all the different hobbyist communities that are tinkering with all these sorts of things. I mean, it sounds like, I imagine a lot of the listeners here are biohackers in their own garages or in their own kitchens, like playing with different things. And, we were very much in that vein, cutting that cloth. And it was interesting, right? So like, there's clearly some signal going on if thousands, tens of thousands of people, I would say probably hundreds of thousands of people are playing with all these sorts of compounds and nootropics and all these things. Some were absolutely insane. Some are playing with stuff that probably doesn't work and is probably snake oil. And some were playing with things that, were scheduled, some illegally, some prescription drugs. Some people are looking at research chemicals. Some people are looking at supplements. And as a initially a skeptic was, looking at the space, seeing that, hey, if I could get smart, this is really cool. People are seeming to get really good results from this. And then two, let's actually bring in the critical lens of looking at clinical research papers on showing which compounds have actual trials done on healthy human volunteers done in a randomized controlled trial. And collating the real science against the community, there are certain nootropics that really like floated to the top in terms of efficacy and safety. And we wanted to, and I wanted to try them, and it was hard for me to feel really safe with a lot of the suppliers and vendors in the space 3 years ago. So I really wanted to have these nootropics for myself, and eventually the learnings I had with figuring how to do heavy metal testing, how to do sourcing, how to get really pure ingredients were the core building blocks of building Nutrabox. And it became a service that just that just wasn't what I wanted, but what, tens of thousands of people wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was a pain point for you where you wanted high quality nootropics that to help you. And yeah, you saw an opportunity to actually help other people at the same time.
Yeah. I remember, as a, as a computer scientist, as an engineer by training, it was really easy for me to post up a website to like start gauging interest. And that first weekend, I posted that link around. We had 32 pre-orders where people literally gave me their credit card number. So I was like, okay, there's clearly something here. Mm. And it was a very raw website that I was able to put together in like an afternoon. And, you know, as a stubborn completionist type of guy, I was like, okay, like I have 32 like customers now, let's figure out how to keep them, make them happy.
Yeah.
and now we have, you know, much more than 32 people.
Because you're based in Silicon Valley. And to me, that's, you know, I live in the UK, and that's always that story of just a startup where you can just, you put the idea out there, you suddenly see there's traffic coming in and you just know how to run with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the beauty of startups, especially the Silicon Valley culture, where I think there's a higher risk tolerance and just a more of a gumption to just pull the trigger and put your ideas out there. You know, the way I think about things is that if you throw out an idea and no one cares, well, then there's no loss of face because no one even noticed. If you put an idea and people love it or they hate it, well, that's a good problem to have, because at least you're breaking out of the noise, where most people don't, you know, are in a very narrow band of existence. No one cares about your idea. So if you can break out of that, all power to you, like pull that trigger, put yourself out there.
And so you started with your nootropics then, and mm-hmm. you've also got a company called GoCubes, which we're going to get into.
Yeah.
But if we could then...
It's all the same company. It's just that's another product line for us.
Okay. Because, yeah, that's also what caught my eye, because that's coffee. And I love my coffee. So So with Nutribox then, you said you managed to source all the high quality ingredients, because that is the problem in the nootropics field. That if you go and search for some of these compounds, it feels like you're going through dodgy backdoor alleys to try to find this powder, you know, and then you wonder, okay, it's coming in a bag from somewhere, you know, some European country, and I don't know like what's this quality like, and it is always a little bit disconcerting thinking, oh, I hope I'm getting the right stuff here. I'm not gonna do myself harm in this sense. And so when you came up with your formulation then, because you've got, what I dig about your company is you make it really, really easy for someone, because you've got the three main types. You've got Rise, and then you've got Sprint, and you've got Yawn, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how easy which one should I take in the morning? Rise, because that's when you get up.
Yeah.
Which one do I take when I go to sleep? Yawn, because that's when I want to go down.
Yeah.
So how did you come up with those formulas? Like, why did you choose those ingredients for Rise and for the other ones?
Yeah. So it's definitely been an iterative process. So when we first launched Nutribox, it was just one stack, Rise, and it was a little bit of a amalgamation of what currently is Rise and what currently is Sprint. So just like kind of like a generic ones, you know, generic like good nootropic. And it was looking at some of the most popular beginner stacks out in the forums, in the hobbyists, right? So some of the best data around nootropics on healthy humans are on Bacopa minieri, Rhodiola rosea, some of these, and they're also had very low side effect profiles. And I think it just is, especially there, you know, for Bacopa, really strong data behind accelerating the increasing BDNF levels, brain derived neurotrophic factor. And then which basically supports and accelerates neuron growth, right? And then done on actual psychometric studies, really interesting results with increasing audio-visual learning task rates of learning and reducing forgetfulness, increasing spatial working memory versus placebo. So again, it was like looking at what was popular with hobbyists, what actually checked out with clinical research, and then putting together in a synergistic way. So while Bacopa is really good for working memory, Rhodiola is really good for reducing the effects of fatigue on cognitive tasks. So interesting trialed on Russian soldiers, folks that basically did overnight patrol afterwards were tested on simple mathematical tasks. Folks were, that were on rhodiola were performing much, much more accurately than folks on placebo. And then when we started off going to market, well, people wanted things that were optimized for, can I get something that is going to be better than a cup of coffee? Because Rise today is more of a chronic product that you get effects building up over time, where Sprint, a caffeine, L-theanine based stack, is gonna punch you immediately. So essentially, as we grew, more and more customers were giving us feedback. Hey, we want something that's going to work a little bit more acutely. Wait, we want something that help us optimize our sleep. We want something that help optimize this. So what started off as just an initial beachhead into the space of nootropics became, I think, just a working relationship with our customers where, in some ways, you know, yeah, our bosses are our customers. So let's build the best possible products for people to optimize their productivity.
So, and that's what I found interesting. You're one of the first probably nootropic companies that I've seen that mentions how Rise is a chronic daily nootropic, meaning not chronic in the sense that some people might think it bad, like chronic and acute inflammation we're talking about. It's that you feel you've created a product that's safe to take long term, and its effects on your brain in that sense. And you are trying to come back to your original goal of trying to help make yourself smarter by taking chemical compounds. And these are natural chemical compounds, right? They're found naturally. Yeah. And you're trying to take these to enhance your brain and your memory pathways.
Yes.
And it's safe to, and so you feel it's safe to take Rise long term. You don't need to cycle it in any way.
Right. So I think a lot of people, you know, suggest cycling different protocols. But the way we look at it is that all the compounds that we do use are FDA generally regarded as safe. In that lens, you know, one, you know, might want to just put in cycling behavior. But I think in terms of just like being able to use it chronically, it's absolutely safe for that. Which I think is interesting, because I think in the larger umbrella of nootropics, right? Like I think I teased towards this a little bit earlier, where you have things that are FDA generally regarded as safe, things that are scheduled. You know, a lot of people ask me, what do you think about microdosing LSD, right? Like LSD acid is a scheduled illegal drug, but people are, you know, using that for potential nootropic effects. On the other hand, you have people experimenting with modafinil, Provigil, a narcolepsy drug, right? You need to be prescribed that with a doctor. Or there are things that are unscheduled, things that are research chemicals. So under the umbrella of nootropics, it's really orthogonal to the regulatory status, right? Like paracetam, NuPEP, these are unscheduled in the United States. So they're not scheduled, you're not supposed to sell them for human consumption. They're also not a legal drug, so they're in this gray area. So it's an interesting space that we're in, because I think there will need to be new regulation, new legislation around a new category of inputs or compounds, where it's not a drug, it's not a legal drug, but it's an enhancement class of compounds, and just regulation hasn't caught up to that new reality.
And I'd be interested, because when I was speaking with Brianna, who's on your team, I mean, she's an ex-high-level rower in the UK, and we were talking about her ketone ester, but I'd actually be interested to know, are nootropics considered safe for athletes to take, or are they seen as a banned substance? Do you know?
So it depends on the exact compound, right? So like nootropics really just an umbrella term that, again, covers a whole swath of individual compounds. So I know, you know, various racetams are banned by WADA. But, you know, omega-3s or caffeine is not, right? So like caffeine, and it actually is one of the best things that actually works. If you actually look at clinical trial data, caffeine actually works for physical performance, but it's not banned. So I think the, I guess, regulators in terms of sports really look at. I think they have just a different lens of how they classify. I think this is considered a steroid. This is considered doping. This is not considered doping. But I think a subset of nootropics are considered doping. A subset are not.
Yeah. And so with your, is that something that even Nutrabox would be considering? I don't know if you potentially would have elite athletes, you know, professional players in different sports, and would they want to know it taking Rise or, you know, any of the different Nutrabox products, are they safe?
Yeah, so that's something that we're focusing more on, the NSF or Informed Sport, Informed Choice certifications, where, you know, we do all the heavy metal testing. We actually publish our certificates of analysis open source. So you can actually go to GitHub and like look at each batch's purity testing, heavy metal testing, microbiological contamination testing. We already sort of go above and beyond what's necessary. But for a lot of athletes and sports organizations, they require like an NSF, they require an organizational stamp. So that's something we're working on.
Okay, that's cool. Sorry, it's just something I had that idea that popped into my brain there.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, and I'm glad you're also doing the open source, because I managed to speak with another nootropics company before, and they're pushing the open source labeling. And I think that's fantastic from a supplement company point of view, that you're willing to give the data information, say, look, we actually are providing this element, you know, this substance, and it is pure. So it just gives confidence and trust to the consumer, I feel.
Yeah, I think that was like one of the things I think we were initially known for. And that's, I think, why a lot of people consider us one of the, you know, the leaders in the space.
And I think that comes back to what I kind of mentioned earlier with the nootropics and feeling like you're going through dark alleys. And so when you've been in that world where you want to take these substances to enhance your brain, but you felt it was very murky, and then you come to a company and they say, no, it's fine. Here, look at the full pathway. It's okay. I think that's a biggie for people who want to take brain enhancing supplements.
Yeah. I think if you look at the industry, when it was, a lot of people use proprietary blends and all these things. And proprietary blend is really industry code words for kind of like whatever's on the shelf. We're going to just kind of jam in there, and we can make the same label claim. That was just so stupid, you know, from as a consumer, because you know what the clinical trials show. Like, they use 300 milligrams of Bacopa Monnieri at 50% backside rate for this trial. Like, we know what is an effective dose as shown by randomized controlled trials. So why are you obfuscating that? And if I were to do other supplements on top of that, or other compounds on top of that, I should know exactly what I'm getting to my body, not just like, hey, I'm taking 1.2 grams of potentially seven different things. I think it's a disservice to people to treat them, to hide information from them.
And I think, especially when you get deeper into the N=1 experimentation and biohacking, you're your own biochemist. So you'd like to know, I've just gone and I've read an article that I need to take 2 grams of X substance. I would like to be able to source 2 grams of that and not, I have no idea what I'm getting substance.
Exactly.
Cool. So with the Nutrabox nootropics, then, your range that we just mentioned, are there any side effects that people need to know about potentially that you can think of?
Yeah. I think with our Sprint stack, you know, there's caffeine in that stack. So if one is sensitive to caffeine, you know, there's caffeine in that stack. But in general, we had essentially no serious adverse reactions.
And that's what I like about natural nootropics versus the, as you mentioned, the pharmaceutical ones. When you start getting into your modafinils, you just have no idea what's going to happen down that route, because it's hardcore. So. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think hardcore, not hardcore. I mean, I think if you look at some of the data, one of the components in Rise has as strong effects as modafinil, apparently. And this is a meta-analysis published by this Australian group. I think it's like, again, the way I look at it is that regulation and effectiveness is not necessarily correlated. It's in some ways kind of arbitrary. So I think it's, we're looking at the data of how these things work. And then two, basically, typically, like companies that actually follow regulation tend to keep the higher standards, right? If you are okay selling unscheduled compounds, well, maybe you're not as careful, or you're likely not as careful around heavy metal testing, all the other safety testing that one would want. So I think there's just like a lot of correlations in terms of hardcoreness, right? If you're like getting modafinil off the street, like that's maybe a step above buying ecstasy pills off of a drug dealer, right? Like it's that same level of like, hey, we're okay dealing with sketchy things.
And I'm always interested when looking at supplements too. I feel sometimes it's hard for the user to understand like how much they should take or when is the best time to take it. Can you give any tips on your nootropics as to, is it before food, with food, after food, or, you know, if you're a big guy like me, do I follow that, or do I have to actually increase the amount that I take versus someone who might be more petite? Do you have any guidance on that?
Yeah, so we like we recommend RISE and Keto 3 first thing in the morning, tall glass of water, and then sprint as opposed to late afternoon or early afternoon or late morning, tea, coffee. You can use sprint, and then yawn is really good for jet lag and getting over that. And then we do have people experimenting with different levels of 2-3 pills. Whenever investors is a general partner, Andreessen Horowitz. He's also a professor at Stanford in chemistry and computational biology. He's taking 3 Keto 3 pills as opposed to 2. So people are experimenting with different ratios, and he really thinks that 3 is better for him than 2.
Okay. And what I'd like to get onto now, because you were talking about the morning, because you're a big proponent of fasting, aren't you? I mean, Brianna was telling me how, as a company, you do a weekly fast, isn't it?
Yeah. So when we first launched and started getting a lot of traction in press, we were written up in the New York Times. Dr. Sandrine Thoret from Imperial College, I believe, emailed me and was saying, hey, like, we're interested in the same things. And she had a TED Talk on fasting as one of the most effective ways to increase neuron growth, which is interesting. Because, we can increase cognitive performance and neuron growth through nootropics, but also through other methods like fasting. And at the time, one of my colleagues, Paul, started to get into fasting because there's a lot of emerging research around fasting as punching better for longevity. So as biohackers, we thought, hey, this is interesting. It sounds kind of insane because, I'm a relatively, I've always been sort of a thin person. Our entire company's, quite fit because, as biohackers, we care about being healthy. And it was like a pretty foreign notion to be like, hey, let's not eat. Because I don't think any of us had like not eaten for, a day. But the data was there. The science was pretty compelling. So we decided to give it a try. So we just did it together as like a group challenge. And that one helped us really stick it out together. Because if you're just doing something crazy by yourself, it's hard to maintain that. But if it's a whole group of people doing it, that social commiseration was really helpful to allow us to get through the first couple of fasts. And then we realized that it was actually pretty fun. Like after, the third, fourth fast, you get a really interesting mental clarity of being in a fasted state. And that is also related to elevated ketone levels, for ketones are a more efficient fuel for the brain. So that really became a core part of our company culture, where not just we would do a fast between Monday night and Wednesday morning and then do a breakfast together, as a celebration. It then became a weekly ritual for us, for not just NutriBox employees started going to these breakfasts, like our communities, our customer members started coming. And it really became this like just almost a product, if you will, of our company. For we really look at our fasting community, WeFast. It's called WeFast. It has, almost 10,000 members across the Facebook group and a Slack channel talking about fasting as a way to increase their performance on one hand, but also as a way to, help lose weight and control their diabetes and other metabolic syndrome. So really a cool community that we've created out of, hey, let's fast because maybe it makes us grow neurons faster.
So someone who's interested in fasting, then they can join your I guess it's the Facebook group you said and a Slack group.
Yeah, Facebook group and a Slack group. So the Slack group is a little bit more, I would say, biohacker focused, meaning people a little bit more savvy around, you know, supplements, keto, nootropics, and then folks in the Facebook group a little bit more just broad, you know, everyone. So we have people from, you know, that are overweight and diabetic from Ohio to, you know, people trying to lose weight in Brazil to everywhere.
Okay, so it's anyone in the world can join your Facebook group. They don't have to be in your location unless they were lucky enough, right. And then they could go have a cool breakfast with everyone.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. So you found now that when you were saying after 3 or 4 fasts, are you saying that because you would do that fast, I think it's about 36 hours or so that you're fasting. So you do that for 1 week and then you do it again the next week. Did you say then that you noticed after doing it by the fourth time you did it, so 4 weeks from now, that you were feeling mentally different? Or is it that when you fasted for more days in a row that you had that feeling?
Well, both. So our bodies need to be adapted to using ketosis. So as you might know, our bodies typically are using carbohydrate as a fuel source. So we're constantly in glycolysis, using glucose as fuel. And we're never really ever dipping into ketosis, which is using ketones or which is generated from fat as a fuel source. And we obviously have 300,000 kilocalories of fat in our body. We only store 2,000 kilocalories of glucose in our bodies. So it's really like an energy reserve for us that we never tap into. And just our internal biotechnology is not adapted because we're just so used to using glycolysis, we're not ready to shift into ketosis. So our bodies have become quite inefficient, unused to being in ketosis. So after a couple of times, your body's like, hey, this is a normal pathway. Mm-hmm. We start acting up on the enzymes to actually, you know, go in this pathway.
Yeah. It didn't freak out.
By week four, your body's like, oh, you're going to keto, elevate ketone levels, and then it takes a little bit of time to have your body get keto adapted, and then two, when you're doing obviously longer fasts, you get elevated ketone levels. So we had talked to Brianna. You might know the millimole scale for measuring ketones. So we're probably around 0.1, 0.2 millimole, which is very low ketones. Incidentally, I'm wearing a glucose monitor, so I can actually just tell you how much blood glucose I have. So I have 4.8 millimole glucose right now.
Yeah. So for people who are listening on iTunes, they wouldn't have seen the YouTube video there, but that was fascinating. You just swiped a device over your arm and you just showed me what your glucose readings are.
Yes. So I'm wearing a quasi implant. So it's a little disc and there's actually a needle that penetrates my skin and is essentially sampling my blood. So I basically have this in every for 2 weeks at a time where it really allows me to understand and control and manipulate, at least on the output side, my blood glucose levels.
Yeah. I mean, that's because I'm a big proponent of using postprandial testing to help educate people, you know, so after a meal to look at any glucose spikes. Yeah. And with something like that, you'll be able to monitor it as many times as you want because you just swipe it over, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically, there's a Bluetooth basically reader that just collects the data. And yeah, it's just awesome. It's instead of doing finger pricks and all of that, which we've gotten used to as well. This is much, much more convenient. Yeah. So,
that's publicly available for people?
Yeah. So it's typically used as a medical device for diabetics. It's called a Freestyle Libre. There's other manufacturers as well that we like using a Freestyle Libre.
That's a proper biohacking gadget.
Yeah. Check it out.
Yeah.
But anyways, to go back to the ketone point, if I'm fasted for around 20, 24 hours, I'll get to around 0.6 millimole. If you're eating a ketogenic diet, you're typically around 0.5, 1.0 millimole, unless you're like very, very strict over a long period of time. When I did you know, when I do 3 days of fasting, I'll get around 2.5 millimole ketone. If I go to do 7 days of fasting, I'll hit up to like 5.4 millimoles of ketones. And obviously the higher amounts of ketones, the more sort of subjective, interesting head rush that you have.
Mm. Yeah, I've heard about it, like a keto buzz is how some people explain it over their scalp and their brain. It's a different sensory feeling that they have when they're in deep ketosis from fasting.
Yeah. 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 No, it is cool. And obviously.
And you take nootropics in that state too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're like supercharging it.
Yeah, exactly. It's working on different pathways, right? So ketones work on fueling the brain through an alternate fuel source, and then nootropics, operate in a different pathway. So yeah, I mean, they would synergize as opposed to like cancel each other out. Okay.
And I wanted to ask you too, because you're based in Silicon Valley. So I saw fasting is becoming quite popular in Silicon Valley. And there was even today someone that you know who made the news headlines.
CNBC. Yeah. Phil Libin, who, as some might know, was the former co-founder CEO of Evernote, a popular note-taking app. I just saw him last week. He's lost a ton of weight doing fasting. I mean, I think I would like to say that we were a part of making this a thing in Silicon Valley. If you look at some of the literature, 2 years ago, it was talking about how this startup was, everyone is fasting, and we have this fasting community of thousands of people joining, around the world and in Silicon Valley fasting with us. I think if you look at the data is clear that especially in our, first world countries like UK, like the United States, people have skyrocketing cases of metabolic syndrome, diabetes, obesity, Alzheimer's. And a lot of that is likely driven by the fact that we're over consuming all the time. One analogy I like to make is that think about the notion of working out exercise. In the early 20th century, the notion that one would leave the farm field or leave the factory labor line to go do exercise on a treadmill would have sounded insane. But in the last 20, 30 years, as labor becomes more and more intellectual as is physical, we need to reinstall physical exercise back into our routines. That's why you saw corporate gyms and companies like Nike really explode in the last 20, 30 years. My thesis is that fasting will need to be reinstalled into our routine, just like exercise was. But if you look at food consumption in Silicon Valley, no longer do you have no fear of being starved. You have no fear of starvation. We're constantly being fed with free food, free meals, free snacks given to you, shoved in your face. If you visit a Google or a Facebook, it's just like a snack aisle to every 2 feet. And they give you awesome catered meals. And our bodies were not designed for that. Our bodies were designed to go through feast and famine cycles. So that's why we need to reinstall fasting back into our culture. And it's not a crazy notion. If you look at Roman culture was based on one large meal a day. A lot of Asian cultures were based on two meals a day. So really a three meal a day dogma that seems like such a core part of humanity is really a recent phenomenon. You again, look at history, the three meal a day system was really designed to optimize for industrial revolution, factory line laborers, where you needed one meal in the beginning of the day to do your first shift of work, a break in the middle to do a second shift of work, and then you're so exhausted at the end of the day, you have a third meal. We're no longer factory line laborers. Let's update our culture and our eating protocols to match a modern civilization.
Mm-hmm. And I want to get it because we've got probably maybe 5 or 10 more minutes left. Can we get into coffee and your Go Cubes?
Yeah. Yeah.
So why Go Cubes? Why put coffee in a cube?
Yes. So we realized quite early that if I bring up some pills to you, these are some NutriBox pills. You want to try them. And we've done that, obviously, as entrepreneurs. People are like, whoa, that's a little crazy. I'll take them and maybe try them later. So we knew that the form factor presenting nootropics to the mainstream has some visual challenges, right? Because when people look at pills, you think of drugs or like medicine or illegal drugs, which, you know, it is what it is. But we think that everyone will be biohackers. We really believe that just like Nike was able to establish that everyone was an athlete. If you look at Apple Computer, turning, you know, the homebrew computing club nerds in the garages in Silicon Valley in the 70s and 80s, everyone now has an iPhone. It's really a supercomputer. If you think of the computing power in the iPhone, we think the same thing's going to happen with biohacking. Right now, it's a hobbyist community. Some of our listeners that might be listening in different pockets in Silicon Valley and elsewhere around the world. But I think everyone in the world will look like us in the next 5 years. So we really looked at, okay, how do we help, you know, seep this interesting stuff into the mainstream? And we realized that, well, coffee is essentially the most commonly used quote unquote nootropic in the world, where, you know, 2 billion cups are consumed a day, and most of them are not nice cappuccino Saturday night dates with the, you know, the partner. It's really just like, give me my instant coffee so I can wake up and go to work. And we looked at that, and as engineers, we're like, can we make a better version of coffee? Can we actually re-engineer it a little bit so it's actually better as a productive productivity agent, as opposed to like, hey, this is some bean that was grown and we're gonna drink its mashed up liquid. So that's where the genesis of GoCube started. So I was like, okay, one, we think that we need to innovate around the form factors of nootropics, and then two, what better place to start than just reinventing coffee for something that's more portable, more modular, where you know exactly how much caffeine you're getting, and then adding other nootropics like L-theanine that synergize really well with caffeine.
Because I saw a recent post, well, I think it was a food science article, how your cup of coffee at your local coffee house isn't the same in milligrams of caffeine per day. So you know you're getting your same drink every day.
It's crazy. Yeah, it depends on the barista, depends on the steam time, the espresso, depends on the bean.
Yeah,
the variance is like 50 milligrams, 150 milligrams, right? Like, especially as biohackers, we need to be very precise. And, you know, for each cube of GoCubes, you have 50 milligrams of caffeine, 100 milligrams of L-theanine. We know exactly the modular dose of, you know, these active compounds. And then obviously we can continue to, you know, iterate and improve as we do more and more clinical trials.
Mm-hmm. So,
but like this coffee bean, you're not evolving.
Yeah. So the caffeine you get in there, is it from a coffee bean that you're getting that caffeine?
Natural caffeine. Yeah.
Okay. And then the flavoring is also natural flavoring, is it? Or how does that work? Because you've got different flavors too.
Yeah. So we use Brazilian coffee beans as the core, as part of the flavoring. And then we have, you know, a mocha, a latte, and a drip coffee specific flavors. So a little bit more chocolatey coffee, a little bit more milky coffee, and a little bit more just coffee.
Okay. And with your sourcing then, do you believe in the mycotoxins issue when it comes to coffee beans? Do you go as far as that?
If you look at the data, there's nothing there.
Yeah. Okay.
And obviously, if you just look at coffee standards, they look at contaminants. I mean, so yeah, I think we're looking at, you know, Dave Asprey looking at mycotoxins. I encourage people to look at the data there. Like, there's it seems like a lot of hoopla over nothing.
Okay. Yeah, because I'd just be interested, especially when you get into that coffee world. Yeah,
I've looked at the literature there, right? People are, I think Joe Rogan and Dave Asprey had a big argument about this, actually, where like Joe Rogan like called them out, being like, hey, like, you can sell your coffee beans, so like, don't make up some story about something that is, you know, scaring people for no reason.
Okay.
So I let the listener actually just read the literature itself. And I think as biohackers, we're very curious and independent. So read it and make up your own mind. And I think if you read it, it's like, okay, there's not much here to really make an argument for.
Okay, cool. And So just as a closing point then, anyone who's interested in Nutrabox supplements or wants to find out more about the company, what's the best way to get hold of you guys?
Yeah, check out our website, Nutrabox.com, Nootrobox.com, or Google us, or we're all over all the social media channels. And then I think the fasting group, I think that's an awesome, free, easy way to join our community. WeFast, WEFAST, Google that, or type in www.wefa.st, and then point you to our Facebook and Slack groups. Talk biohacking, talk fasting with, you know, thousands of other crazy biohackers that are, you know, we had 100+ people do a 7-day fast with us back in January. So we got people that are doing like 7-day fasts, people that are just starting to do fasting, really just a fun group of biohackers at all experience levels.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to link to all these, resources in the show notes. I'm actually going to go onto Facebook and join that group now, because I'm always looking for biohacking groups.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. And then absolutely share this podcast once it goes live to the group. I think it'd be a fun conversation for them, for everyone.
Yeah. I look forward to it. Well, Jeff, thanks so much for coming on today.
Yeah. Cheers, Gary.
Okay.
Yeah. Talk.
Bye.